As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club, Lakers podcast from The Athletic. I'm Bill Orem, joined by Anthony Slater and Jovan Buha. This week is a real interesting week for the Los Angeles Lakers. Last week was too. And going into last night's game against the Denver Nuggets, I think we're all kind of ready to write off the Lakers. Jovan and I wrote a story that was basically a timeline of the Lakers' season falling apart. Their defense hadn't been good since Anthony Davis returned. LeBron James is injured again. And then, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, they knock off Denver. The defense looks great. Marc Gasol comes out of nowhere. And, you know, I guess the question right off the bat this week, gentlemen, is does last night's result and the performance against the Nuggets change the way you look at this Lakers team as a contender right now? Because I think after Sunday's loss to Toronto, the Lakers look dead in the water and nothing like a team that will be anywhere near the NBA Finals this year.
Bill shoveling dirt on their grave. I don't know that last night changed my perception. I mean, like, I want to ask you guys about the injury issues. I see Anthony Davis last night getting his Achilles area, calf area stretched out, and then obviously those quotes that emerged from LeBron James scare me more than anything if I was talking about the Lakers' title hopes. But knowing that those two potentially will play in the playoffs, I was never ready to scratch them off the contending list. Just like I don't think a 93... I don't think a 93-89 a bloodbath. By the way, I thought that was a third quarter score when I was kind of covering
it. Unbelievable.
It's a good sign for them. I thought the Marc Gasol stuff that I know you guys covered last night is emerging as a storyline, and the fact that he probably helps them more than other centers. But if we were, I don't know. To me, every contender has a question right now. I might still pick the Lakers because I don't feel confident about anybody, really.
You pick the Lakers to win the championship right now?
I don't know that I would. I mean, who would you pick?
I would take the field.
Okay, that's fine. You know what? I'd probably take the field too, but I'm telling you, pick a team to win the title. My point is there's no, like, Nets have the James Harden hamstring plus Kevin Durant's had injury issues all year. Do you believe in Philly? Do you believe in Milwaukee? Okay, let's go out west. Utah, Phoenix. I mean, if you're ready to pick one of them, that feels like a bold take. I'm not saying you're wrong, but and then to me, like, I picked the Clippers at the beginning of the season. You could make a Clipper argument right now. My point is, like, it's so open right now. It feels so open. And that, to me, if it's so open and LeBron and Anthony Davis haven't been ruled out for the season, I'm certainly not ruling them out.
I think that's fair. I think all those teams you just listed, yes, they have their problems, but they also have their act together more than I think the Lakers do right now. I mean, Brooklyn obviously has their own grave injury concerns, but if you look at what the Lakers have been over the last couple of weeks, the tone of that locker room, kind of a despondence in the way that in the way they talk about their own situation. You had Frank Vogel calling his team shook last night going into that game. Kyle Kuzma saying that the group isn't together. LeBron and AD both agreeing with that. To me, those are fundamental problems that don't get solved with a single win against a shorthanded Denver team. Denver been the hottest team in the league over the last 10 games. Don't get me wrong. The offense have been great. And the Lakers, what the Lakers did was impressive. But if you look at the body of work really over this entire season, this has been trending downward for the Lakers. And I don't think if you're a Laker fan, And I think that's our primary audience here. I would love to hear from Lakers fans on what gives them confidence that the Lakers can win the championship, and how long you're willing to believe because we have LeBron James is good enough. LeBron, you know, made it through a game in three quarters before he had to go to the back to deal with his ankle. His ankle's not ready. We don't know when it's going to be ready. So yes, if the Lakers are 100% going into the playoffs, then they are more or less who we thought they were. But there is zero indication they're going to be 100% based on what we've seen. Let's get Jovan in here because he's been very patient. Jovan, is your panic meter going off? Are you settled down? Were we premature with our story, basically calling this season a disappointment and ready to close the book on them as contenders? Where have you landed, and how did last night shape where you've landed?
I don't think we were premature, because I think you're a little bit more down on them than I am, but I don't think we necessarily wrote them off. I think we just were documenting, hey, this is what has gone wrong up to this point, and this is where it looks like things are trending. And we talked about it during the game, and I was like, if they lose this game, it's like a code red to me, because you are now 1-5 since Anthony Davis returned, 0-2 since LeBron returned, with both losses coming against lottery teams. And that to me is like, you know, I made this, I don't know the difference between an analogy and a metaphor, so one of the two, last night on the postgame pod, that it's felt like the Lakers have had this protective blanket all season over them, where it's just been, you know, from the beginning of the season, it was, hey, you know, they're coming off this short offseason. It doesn't matter what happens during the regular season. They just need to get to the playoffs healthy and whole. And as long as they have LeBron and AD, they'll be okay. Then LeBron and AD both get injured in the regular season, and it's like, okay, now the regular season really doesn't matter. They're probably going to be a low seed. Let's just get to the playoffs, have LeBron and AD healthy. Well, they've both come back, and they've both not looked that good. I mean, AD, it really took him till game 7 to start to look somewhat like himself. LeBron, I thought, was solid, but still you could tell physically was not close to being 100%, and then obviously exited the game. So you're just kind of looking at it like, I mean, yeah, we don't know if they're going to have LeBron and AD. We don't know if those guys are going to be healthy. And if they don't have those guys healthy, like, this team is probably going to lose in the first round. So that was kind of where I was approaching it Sunday night. I do think last night's win moves the needle for me, just because we have not seen a certain level of fight from this team consistently for weeks now. And especially since AD came back, I mean, they've been dropping games to lottery teams. And I think for them to play a Denver team that was 9-1 with the league leading offense over that 10 game stretch, the MVP favorite in Nikola Jokic, for them to win a game like that, like, that does matter to me, right? Like, this, they didn't beat Orlando again. You know, they didn't beat Sacramento or Toronto. Like, they beat a Denver team that's playing really, really well. And I don't want to read too much into that, but it did show me, like, Frank said it before the game. He's like, we're not going to go down without a fight. And the Lakers have been saying stuff like that recently, but not really backing it up. And last night they backed it up. So for me, I mean, we'll see where it goes. They play the Clippers on Thursday. They play the Blazers on Friday. They lose both of those games. They're back in the 7th seed, and we're probably having a different conversation.
Yeah, you know what conversation we're having? Warriors Lakers playing, baby. That's going to be a great match.
NBA is going to love that.
That would be, you know, that would be some ratings for a playing game.
Seriously.
I do think that, like, you touched on something that's so important, Jovan, is, like, we don't know what yesterday's game means. We don't know what it means yet without seeing what happens against the Clippers, against the Blazers, and against the Suns. I mean, those are, like, the Nuggets win was kind of the tip of the spear of this schedule, where it gets really tough. You know, they coming into last night, they had 8 games left, and they, and you know, 4 of them are really, really tough, and then the back half is not as bad. They won the first one, and so if they can go 2-2 over these next, you know, 3 games, or over, you know, including last night, you know, I mean, that is definitely progress from where they've been, and I think that's pretty good. You know, that's pretty good, especially if LeBron's not playing. Obviously, we know they're not going to have Dennis Schroeder. We haven't mentioned him yet. And so I do think that does kind of help, you know, stem the tide a little bit if they can pick up one of these next 3, or, I mean, obviously 2 would be, you know, an absolute windfall, and I think would help restore order. But the fact that they were having the problems they were having at the time they were having them, which is going into, you know, the toughest remaining stretch of the season where you're playing, you know, 4 of the 5 top teams in the West, or 4 of the 6 or, I guess, 4 or 6 or 7, kind of depending on how the 5 spot sort of shakes out. But as of Sunday night, your next 4 games were against 4 of the top 5 teams in the Western Conference. That was really concerning. And so if the Lakers lose these next 3, you know, last night's game doesn't really register as making that big of a difference. But in terms of momentum and in terms of, you know, sort of your power rankings meter, the Lakers at least turned the arrow around. It's not trending downward right now. It's a first step. And then it depends on where they go from there. But if AD plays like he played last night, particularly in the first half, it's going to make a difference. But I mean, the biggest thing, and we really just, you know, LeBron himself said it, if LeBron's not back and able to play, you know, his normal load and give his normal contribution, you know, forget being 100%. If LeBron can't be LeBron, then this team is dead in the water. You know, there is no LeBron's at 50%, you know, misses a few playoff games, and, you know, AD can carry them. This team isn't good enough. I think that is what we've learned.
So he had that quote about that he'll never get back to 100% in his career. Outside looking in, that was like kind of an ominous comment from him. What was your guys' takeaway from that? Like, because, you know, you probably have a fuller context than I do. Did he, like, I mean, was he generally just saying, like, look, hey, I'm at this age, I'm never gonna be like 100% prime LeBron again? Or was he literally saying, like, my ankle is so screwed up, it will never be 100% again, and I will never be the same player? Like, what did you take away from that quote?
Well, one, I think that question probably deserved a follow up that it didn't get, just due to the nature of Zoom reporting in 2021. But I took it, Jovan, you can tell me if you had a different take on it. I took it as he meant, you know, relative to prime LeBron, he's never going to be 100% ever again. I mean, like, the number is ticking downward. So I didn't take that to be specifically about his ankle, that his ankle is such a, you know, a mess of ligaments that the ankle will never be 100% again. But, you know, I do think that the ankle might be bad enough that he'll never be 100% this year. And there's just so much we don't know about this, about the injury, and you know, we've gotten kind of a generic explanation, you know, high ankle sprain that doesn't speak to the fact that it was an inversion sprain, meaning that his ankle rolled the other way, the possibility of a bone bruise. LeBron describing a sharp pain in his ankle 6 weeks after that injury does indicate, like, that there could be a bone bruise, and those take months, like, just months. And if that's what he's dealing with and he's trying to come back, then you understand why, like, you know, he didn't feel it until he got into a high intensity game situation, and that's not going to go away if that's what it is. And we just don't know, because, you know, we don't have moles in the training room, but we're working on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I thought, you know, you actually asked the question about if he came back too early, and I thought that was a little bit more troubling, right? Because that's when he mentioned the sharp pain. And the fact that he did have to test it out to kind of see where he was at, and you know, and that was basically kind of why he's out now. I think, like, had he maybe returned a little bit later, maybe he would have been able to just kind of go into the playoffs playing consecutive games. But now we don't know how long he's going to be out. And it's just, I mean, I think the other part of this is, you know, we're talking about LeBron and AD returning and they just have to be healthy. But it's also the continuity. Like, at some point,
yes,
the continuity matters, and you know, the lack thereof. And I definitely saw that last season with the Clippers, where, you know, that was it was kind of like, you know, people anointed the Clippers the favorites from training camp. And it's two different situations, because the Lakers have won a championship and that Clippers team, you know, hadn't. So I think there's an experience, you know, difference there. But it was like all season, you know, the Clippers just got to get healthy. They got to get healthy. And as long as they're healthy, you know, they'll be okay. And look at their record in like the 15 games they play together. And with the Lakers, it's similar, where LeBron and AD have only played, what, 25 games together, I think. And look at their record with those guys and this starting lineup and this and that. But it just never materialized, because when it got to, you know, critical games, like, those lineups and rotations had just not really played many minutes together. I know some of the Lakers have, going back to last season, but we're still looking at some key pieces and Dennis and Mark and Trez and even Wes, who I think showed his value last night in a potential bench role. Like, those guys have not played. And Andre Drummond, yeah, I didn't even mention Drummond. Like, a lot of these guys have not played together. And the fact that they're now going to be expected to step in and play a game six or seven, because I think whoever the Lakers get matched up with, like, even if it's Denver, that's probably a six or seven game series at this point. With the lack of just continuity and reps the Lakers have gotten, like, I don't see them coming in and just kicking Denver's ass. Like, I think Denver's going to at least push that to six or seven. They'll have home court advantage. That's going to be a tough series. So, I just think this is all starting to accumulate, and I don't know at what point, you know, does the dam break and it's just too much.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Davis stuff you mentioned from last night, though, that's a good, like, was that Anthony Davis's most encouraging game of the season, right? Because, I mean, that first month before he even left with an injury wasn't great. And then he showed some juice last night. You mentioned the good first half he had, but the block late, the floater that kind of sealed it, the way he was emotionally invested in the game, it seemed like roaring a little bit, like when the game was pretty much out of reach. That was a big sign. I don't know I do think the avoidance of the play-in for just LeBron's body in particular is very important, because the play-in, I think, lasts like 4 days or so, and it's very rare this season where if let's say you make the playoffs in the top six seed and are waiting for your first round opponent, or waiting for the first round, I think there's like a week break from end of regular season to start of playoffs while the play-in goes on. So that would be an important break for not only the body, but a lot of times NBA teams gain a bit of better rhythm and continuity in practice. You go behind the scenes and you get a really good practice, which is very rare in the regular season, like good long training camp style practices. So if they get a 4 or 5 day break leading into the playoffs, and that can only really happen if they avoid the play-in, I think that would really help them. But a lot of that's on LeBron. Do you guys want to talk about the center? I mean, I thought it was interesting from the outside looking in here, and Kyle Kuzma basically publicly vouch for more Marc Gasol. You very rarely see that, a player like talking sub patterns in media sessions. But then Marc Gasol, plus 17 last night, and Montrezl Harrell, I think, was in the minus and only played like 10 minutes. Explain to me the state of the center position.
Listen, Jovan did an entire podcast on this last night. So, I mean, I would direct listeners who maybe missed that to the podcast. I believe the title of the podcast is Marc Gasol Deserves a Bigger Role with the Lakers. So that's kind of the state of things. Marc Gasol came in and was an absolute game changer last night. And it just takes you back to what the Lakers wanted from him when they signed him, where he's making these just incredible, quarterback passes from the backcourt, outlet passes to, for fast breaks, easy fast break buckets. The offense just pops with him out there. And you can debate the value of having a guy like Andre Drummond, who's big and mean and, really valuable around the rim, but also a big body to throw to a guy like Jokic. But I just don't. I can't get on board with the idea that what Marc Gasol does, even just off defensive rebounds and to get the offense moving, isn't something that you need to find a place for every night. And there are a few questions. Obviously, Frank Vogel has not played Montrezl Harrell next to Marc Gasol all year. That is something internally they've decided apparently that will not work. But also at the same time, Markieff Morris has missed 25 straight threes over 9 games. So that's not working either. And particularly over these next 8 games where the Lakers are going to be short playmakers and facilitators, I just have to think that Marc Gasol's value would be enhanced. It's not just matchup specific. I mean, he's a guy who gets other players involved and helps them get easy baskets. And I do feel for Marc Gasol on a human level. I think this has been kind of bullshit for him. He was signed in November with an idea and with an explicit stated role. We don't need you to score. We need you to do everything else. We need you to facilitate. We need you to, stretch the floor. And the Lakers were, Jovan, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think they were 21-6 before Marc Gasol got COVID and then ended up missing 8 or 9 games. And in that time that he was out, the Lakers pounced on Andre Drummond, understandably so, sign him and make him the starting center. And, ipso facto, Marc Gasol is benched. And I'm not entirely sure what is particularly fair about that. And I understand it's business. It's not, you know, it's not personal, but the Lakers were playing exceptionally well with Marc Gasol. They were one of the best teams in the West. They were trending. I think they were prohibitive championship favorites when Marc Gasol was the starting center. I'm not saying he's perfect, but the other thing is, and he was averaging what, like 2 points a game, at that point, like, he was not scoring the ball. And ever since they brought in Andre Drummond, I feel like it served as a bit of a kick in the ass to Marc Gasol, or as a point of pride, him saying, hey, you didn't want me to score, but I can score. He's been more aggressive shooting the three. He's been more aggressive looking for his own shot around the basket. His numbers are up, like the counting stats are up. I mean, not to astronomical numbers, but something like 8-6. And I just feel like, you know, he is kind of took it personally and has shown, I can do this. That just isn't what you asked me to do. And I feel like it's a little disingenuous. Like Frank Vogel said last night when I asked him about Mark being more aggressive offensively, he's like, well, we don't need him to score. You know, we need him to, you know, we need him to defend, stretch the floor, and facilitate. But I think if that were true, if that were the way the Lakers looked at it, they wouldn't have gone out and gotten Andre Drummond, who all he does is put up counting stats. Like, you see 20-15, and you think, oh, Andre Drummond is so much better than Marc Gasol, which is really a slap in the face to Marc Gasol and the value that he brought, and the reason the Lakers signed him last fall, because you got Frank Vogel saying last night, the reason we wanted Mark was because he beat us twice last season without scoring. He only scored 8 or 4 points in those games, and he absolutely dominated the game. And then you kind of disregard that value because he doesn't have the tangible stats that, like, you know, everybody salivates over. So you go get Andre Drummond, and now you've benched Marc Gasol. It seems to have come full circle where Mark has embraced this role. Last night he compared himself to Mr. Wolf from Pulp Fiction, and I thought it was a great moment for Mark. And Mark, even to lower my temperature on this a little bit, Mark even said, we need to stop talking about this as individuals and their roles. We are a team. I've bought into my role. You know, it's not going to be every game, but when it is, I'll be ready. Obviously, if you're a Laker fan, you love to hear that perspective from a guy who's in and out of the rotation. But the whole thing just is mind-boggling to me. When you watch Marc Gasol last night, some of his value was because it was specifically against Nikola Jokic, and he was great defensively on Jokic. Marc Gasol played 13 straight minutes from like the 6 minute mark of the third quarter to the 5 minute mark of the fourth quarter. Then he came out for 2 minutes, and then Andre Drummond got benched so Marc Gasol could come in and finish the game, and they win. Like, very telling about his impact in that game. And I just have a hard time believing that, like, he wouldn't have a similar impact in some capacity on a nightly basis. Like, him going between DNPs and then being the MVP of a game is not a sustainable sort of whiplash for him. I think he needs to be playing.
Then is no Montrezl Harrell the result of that, or very, very limited Montrezl Harrell?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think maybe a little less, but, like, I mean, like I said, you know, the Markieff Morris thing too. You know, Markieff has not played particularly well of late. And if you were asking me to, you know, prioritize the Lakers' bigs, you know, I mean, Markieff Morris has been a hugely valuable piece of the Lakers' rotation since he got here last spring.
He's the spread option, right? He's the spread option next to Davis if you will have a matchup, you want to go Davis at the five and just completely spread open the floor around him.
But why can't Mark do that offensively?
Can he? I mean, Markieff Morris is a quick trigger 3-point shooter that you kind of got to be attached to. Marc Gasol is like almost unwilling at times to shoot. I mean, that's been the issue, right? If Marc Gasol's going to chuck, he's probably going to hit around the same percentage as Markieff Morris, but he just doesn't.
For context, Mark is shooting 40% on the year, but it's only on about 2.5 attempts. And I want to go back to what he's done since the Drummond arrival, which I guess would be the Milwaukee game. Is that right, Jovan? March 31st? Yeah. So since then, Mark is shooting in 9 games, 4 starts, shooting 61% from three on 2.6 attempts a game. So it's not the same volume, but I mean, the dude's dialed in.
Bill and I have had a version of this discussion multiple times. Like, for me, I didn't understand from the jump when they signed Andre. Like, it was clear when they signed Andre Drummond, they were bringing him in to be the starter, that, you know, Frank essentially came out and said that was part of the deal of bringing in Drummond, is, you know, he's going to be the starting center. Though I think there's probably should have been more of a conversation there. I think it is what it is. You brought in Drummond, fine. That's the cost of doing business. But for me, it just didn't make sense why Mark went from being the starter, who up till that point, I think had played as well, if not better than Trez, to then being the backup center. And I think with Trez, you know, it's tough because he was a sixth man of the year, and he obviously, you know, is accustomed to playing a certain amount of minutes, and I think it'd be tough to bench him. But I do think, to Slater's earlier question, like, if you're benching one of the three guys, I think it should be Montrezl Harrell. Like, I think it's a conversation of Andre Drummond versus Montrezl Harrell, because I think when you're looking at the three guys, you know, none of them are perfect. They all have certain strengths. They all have certain weaknesses. But Andre Drummond and Montrezl Harrell are much more similar. You know, when Frank was asked, you know, you're talking about all the strengths that Marc Gasol brings. What do Andre Drummond and Montrezl Harrell bring? He basically described the same guy. Like, they are, you know, these dynamic rollers who are going to crash the offensive glass. They're going to occasionally post up. You'd probably rather see Trez post up than Andre. But, you know, they kind of have similar defensive limitations. Andre's a little bigger, so he's, I think he's a better defender. But when you're comparing and contrasting the three, Mark has the you know, biggest divergence from the other two, where he's going to space the floor. And I thought you saw that. Like, THT had amazing driving lanes last night. He didn't have a great game. He did have that clutch bucket at the end, which he actually got because Mark grabbed Nikola Jokic and allowed him to get that offensive rebound. But like, Mark, I think even when he's not shooting, he at least spaces the floor. And, you know, I just wrote about it. Like, you look at the film, he has a couple of threes that Denver's just not going out to contest him. They're like, JaVale McGee and Nikola Jokic are staying home. Then after that, all of a sudden, you see those guys start to play Mark at the three-point line, and there's all these driving lanes for THT, for Alex Caruso, for Kuz. Like, and that's something that Andre Drummond and Montrezl Harrell will never provide. And I just think in this day and age, with the way the game has gone, Marc Gasol is a 3-and-D center, and he helps the Lakers more on both ends, I think, than Andre Drummond or Montrezl Harrell. And I know those guys are going to put up better counting stats. They might get more rebounds. But Marc Gasol's three-point shooting, floor spacing, and passing offensively, and then rim protection defensively, like, he clearly played Jokic the best of the three centers. I mean, I don't think it's up for debate. So I do think there's matchups where he's not going to be able to play. Like, if they're playing the Clippers and the Clippers go small, or they're playing the Nets in the finals and the Nets go small, Marc Gasol can't play. And maybe that's a Montrezl Harrell matchup. Maybe that's just an 80 at the five matchup. But I think, like, this conversation of, you know, should he be in the rotation? Should he be the third string guy? Like, Mark should play. I think it's finding the other two guys. How many minutes are we cutting from them? And, you know, how do we make this work? But to me, Mark has shown he deserves 15 minutes a night. The other 33 minutes, you can figure that out between Drummond and Trez.
Break
I think
down.
That's really well said. I think that we've basically, one, reached consensus, and two, I think that we've basically showed our hand here. I think that the Andre Drummond addition is what it is, but it should not come at the sake of Marc Gasol having an impact on this team. That, to me, is the bottom line.
Yeah. And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Standings. Portland, to me, has kind of a little bit of a tougher finish. I think they're in the middle of a long road trip right now. Dallas has a bit easier schedule. What's the perfect scenario for the Lakers? Stay in six and maybe get Denver, who you saw last night? I mean, because if they're above both of them in five, they might be sitting there with the Clippers, Lakers 4-5, which would be fun. But where are you guys at on all that?
I think the perfect scenario is that you end up with Denver either as in a 6-3 or a 5-4. But it's so jumbled. I mean, where you've got, you know, three teams are within a game of each other, right? With Portland, Dallas, and the Lakers jumbled at 5-6-7. Lakers presently at five, but that'll probably change by the time people are listening to this podcast. And then the Clippers and Nuggets are tied for third. So to me, it's just like, you can't game the system. Like, the best case scenario is that when this is all over, you're matched up with the Nuggets and you're out of the play-in. But I mean, I think the only thing you can say for the Lakers at this point that they can actually control is win your game so you're not in the play-in. Because I think it's going to be better to have a week off and then have to grapple with the Clippers than to have to go through a play-in against the Warriors and, you know, potentially then another game, and then have to play the Suns than it is to have that time off, or Utah. So, I mean, it's just take care of your business, avoid the play-in, whether it's 6, 5, and then you accept your fate because you've put yourself in this position. But the best case scenario, of course, would be to end up with Denver. I mean, Denver, despite how good Denver has been, I think some of their weaknesses caught up to them a bit last night, and you saw kind of some of the vulnerability if they're not getting shots to fall, that, you know, Jokic can't do it all, although last night was pretty incredible. He was doing it all. But, you know, no Jamal Murray still makes them much more vulnerable than any other team in the top four. So to me, there's just no question. I mean, if you can get the Nuggets, great, but it's too jumbled. It's out of your hands. With the exception of maybe at the very end, right? Like the last couple games where the Lakers are at Indiana and at New Orleans, maybe then there can be a bit of gamesmanship, but nothing at this point. Now it's just all about avoiding the play-in.
To me, Portland is very likely going to be the 7 when I look at, number one, the remaining schedule, but also, like, Portland's, you know, they stabilized recently and had a nice 4-game winning streak, but overall they've had a really disappointing month. And you look coming up, they do play at Cleveland on Wednesday, which you would think that would be a win, but after that, big Lakers game, which it's in Portland. That might be the game of the 7 seed matchup. But after that, San Antonio, Houston, yes. But their last three, Portland's last three, at Utah, at Phoenix, at home against the Nuggets.
The only question is whether those teams are still playing their guys. I mean, that's the kind of situation Utah and Phoenix will be.
Yeah, they're side by side with each other right now. So,
I think that's where it's like, but there could be some separation over the last 7-8 games, but we just don't know. I mean, so there is a scenario where Portland really benefits from Jazz, Suns, Nuggets all being locked in, and, you know, they managed to, like, jump the Lakers because of that. I mean, that's not out of the question. We just don't know.
Yeah, I do think, looking at that Laker close, though, you know, Houston, Indiana, New Orleans, like, that gives them a chance to maneuver how they want to maneuver, probably, and chase what they need to chase, or, you know, I think that is a soft close for them.
I mean, it's all back-to-backs, though, too. It's, like, literally entirely back-to-backs. I mean, it's just a weird year. I mean, you hear everyone say it. You know, we've said it on this podcast, but, you know, to think that you know what's going to happen is just foolish at this point with circumstances where you've got players, you know, still entering the health and safety protocols, even though everyone can be getting vaccinated. So the whole thing is still completely up in the air. And I just think that, I don't know, like, if last week when we did this podcast, we were not even close to talking about the Lakers being doomed. And now, like, there's a very real possibility they're going to be in the play-in. Very real. And I just think that this stuff changes so dramatically quickly. And I think that that's, you know, that's a good thing for the Lakers. It's a good thing that things can change quickly, because they need things to change quickly from where they've been over the last 10 days. And they've kind of taken the first step toward that. But, you know, they've got to beat the Clippers. They got to beat Portland. They got to beat Phoenix, you know, or at least win two of those if you're going to reestablish yourself as a legitimate contender.
I think for me, and I was trying to process this as you guys were talking, like, my order, and this might sound a little weird, I'd say we're ranking the three kind of paths or scenarios. I would say Denver won, obviously. I think they're among the top four, the weakest without Jamal Murray. I'd actually say number two, if I'm the Lakers, I'd rather be in the play-in than be matched up with the Clippers in round one. I really think that, you know, I'm on board with, I think the Clippers are better than the Suns and the Jazz. I would rather play Phoenix or Utah in round one than play the Clippers. I do think if the Lakers, the Lakers, with the way they've been playing for the past couple of weeks, and just with the way they're probably going to be playing heading into the playoffs, get matched up with the Clippers, I really don't like that matchup. I'd rather see them later in the playoffs if I'm the Lakers. Now, I know you're tempting fate by going into the play-in, and you know, I'm not
advocating. You're putting strain on the bodies, too.
Yeah,
I'm with Slater on that part of it. That's the only part I feel like, and then it becomes a value judgment. What do you value more? And I think getting a week off to get a couple of real good practices in, the thing the Lakers have talked about was one of the biggest impediments of this season. I would rather have the week of practice, the week of, like, getting bodies right, than the roll of the dice against the Clippers, then have to play the play-in and then go on the road against Utah or Phoenix. Like, that just feels like a doomsday scenario for me. But I do understand what you're saying. I agree that the Clippers would be a disaster in the first round, with or without, I mean, even without the play-in. But I think they could lose in either situation.
At this point, I don't want to overreact to last night's game, but I do think I for sure would favor them. I guess this is an interesting conversation, which maybe we could just have for, like, 2 minutes right now. Like, let's just go through the top four in the West. Would you pick the Lakers over all four of them in, you know, let's say the season ends today, they're matched up with one of the four. Like, would you pick them over each of the four, assuming LeBron's coming back, but we don't know exactly what shape he's in? Are they favored in all four series, or are there a couple where they're not? Or how do you? I would favor them over Denver. The other three, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much on the state of LeBron. I probably would, if you told me LeBron will play 35 minutes every game at least a reasonable LeBron level, and same with Davis, then yeah, I would favor them, particularly with a weak lead up.
All four?
Yeah, I think so. Well, the Clippers, Matt, I don't know. Yeah, I think
what I Slater is saying is that the regular season just doesn't matter at all.
Well, I covered it. I covered the three Dynasty Warriors teams with Durant where, my God, by the end, the regular season really didn't matter. And I mean, it does, but
Did the Warriors ever have as much turnover from a title team as the Lakers have this year? I know they had to integrate a new superstar, which is a huge deal. But in terms of, like, you know, the Lakers have introduced three new starters this year. If you count Gasol and Drummond separately, a full new backup rotation. I just think that this Lakers team didn't have the benefit of the continuity to not worry about the regular season.
I think I am not really high on anybody else is also just like, I think at the, what is underlying my opinion that the Lakers are still very much in the conversation. It's just, I don't think there's a Goliath out there. And the only one that could emerge would be Brooklyn, but they're having, I would say, even worse problems than the Lakers because they don't even have anything to fall back on. Their three players have literally played seven games total ever together. So I don't know. Sometimes I just fall back on superstar champion. Like, you know, I don't want to count out LeBron AD until I'm wrong. And I might be wrong, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like an excuse, but yeah.
I just think that that's the caveat that we've extended the Lakers all season long and that benefit of the doubt. And I do think they've earned it. I think they've completely earned that. But at some point, we have to start asking, when does that, you know, protective layer not protect them from the accumulation of the season? And it sure felt like Sunday was that moment. Now it's on the Lakers to prove us wrong or to overcome that, you know, and the bottom line is that if there's one player in the league that you would give that extra benefit of the doubt to be able to do it, it would be LeBron. I mean, that's why you can't count out the Lakers.
Think about a couple of his Cleveland seasons. They were in worse shape than this, and I know they just won the East. They didn't necessarily go and beat the Warriors in the finals, but you know, they were in bad shape. I think they were 1 year 29th in defense in the league in Cleveland. And then the playoffs came and it was just different. And the only thing that would make me just alter my opinion somewhat lately is the fact that he came back, tapped out, and then gave you guys that quote. Like, that's not a good sign.
We just don't know when he's coming back. We don't know if he's going to play in any of these next three games. My guess would be that he plays it in the Portland game because I feel like that game is so consequential that, if he doesn't play against the Clippers, that would give him a solid Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 4 days between games. And given, like, kind of what's at stake, my guess, I'm guessing here, would be that he would come back for at least that game and then see how it feels.
One thing, I don't know if you guys saw this last week in the, I think it was in my Friday mailbag, that I was just curious on this, so I looked it up. So going back to 1979-80 and looking at every repeat champion, which, you know, you go through the Lakers, the Warriors, the Bulls, etc. The Lakers have, well, now it's 57 because LeBron just missed the last game. But LeBron and AD have missed 57 games this season. No repeat champion has ever had their two best players miss that many games in that season. And the closest was the Warriors in 2017-18, where Steph and KD combined to miss 45 games. But I just found that interesting that, you know, if the Lakers win the championship, this will be basically the most injury-plagued repeat season for a star duo. You know, go, like, those Bulls teams were really healthy. They had 1 year where they missed like 30 games and it was mainly Scottie Pippen. Even those Kobe Shaq teams only missed, you know, 20 combined games with Kobe and Shaq. This is like, we've just never seen a repeat team have their two guys go down for 25 plus games and still win the title.
I think the only thing I'd say to that, because I think that's important, but like that kind of speaks to the weirdness of this year because the extension of that would be, okay, find me a champion, a first-time champion that ever won when their three best players only had ever played seven games as a unit. You know what I mean? Find me a first-time champion that had its starting point guard tear his ACL a month before the playoffs started in Denver, whatever else. I mean, there's really a lot of teams that would have to overcome unprecedented type scenarios to win, or at least, you know, reasonably significant injuries. You know, that's why a team like the Clippers, by the way, does seem like a real contender to me. You can say Utah is kind of new, but Utah's been there too. You know, they were missing Bogdanovich last year in the playoffs. They took Denver to 7 games. Should have won that series. But the Clippers, not only do they have continuity, but, you know, they've been, you know, relative for them, you know, pretty healthy this year. And they have Rajon Rondo, who is, you know, obviously the you know, playoff king. So I think the Clippers in Utah, to me, if you can get over Utah's stylistic stuff, are probably the most logical picks out of the West. But I don't know. I just think there's too many variables this year. And I mean, that's why, again, not to repeat myself, but why you can't fully rule the Lakers out.
We're either going to be watching, you know, Jazz Bucks in the finals and going, continuity matters, regular season matters.
Love it.
Or we're going to be watching Lakers Nets and been like, you know, like the regular season is just the preseason at this point. Just stack stars and wake them up come May. And that's all that really matters. So we'll see.
All right. Well, on that suspenseful note, we're going to call it quits here. We want to thank everyone for listening to the Forum Club, supporting The Athletic, reading our stories, read Jovan and me on the Lakers, Slater primarily on the Warriors, but also the West. And we'll be back next week, and we will have more context. That's always the thing. Like, you know, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever we record, we're kind of prisoners of the moment, and then we get to kind of put it in context a week later. And everything we're talking about is going to play out over the next few days, and we'll be back next week to sort it out and figure out what it meant, because I mean, guys, the Lakers could be in seventh. The Lakers could be, you know, firmly in fifth. I mean, there's a lot hinging over these next few days. So anyway, thanks, guys, for joining us. Thank you to our listeners, and we'll be back next week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.